Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on X, on Twitter, the Everything app, at JWright929. As always, you can listen to us on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. If you're away from the radio dial, though, you can keep up to date by streaming us on the Odyssey app. We're also available on TuneIn and iHeartRadio. You can also check out the live streams over on YouTube, on Twitch, and on X, the Everything app. It's all happening on X. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey.
My company as he is each and every Tuesday on the program. He's the host of VSiN's College Football and Basketball Betting Podcast. Also, check him out on VSiN Primetime, airing on weeknights. You can also check out the VSiN Betting Tailgate Show on Saturdays. Follow him on the Everything app at 1TimMurray. Tim, good day, sir.
Hello. Hello. Yes, it is a good day, and the madness sort of begins tonight, and it is the greatest week of the year.
It is a tremendous, tremendous week. Of course, we will be getting into all things NCAA tournament. We've got the VSiN NCAA, can we say March Madness?
March Mania.
The March matchup's another good one. That betting guide is available if you would like to go to vsin.com and get that bad boy. Also, there's a, in the industry, let's just say there's a thing called the Bible, and that's out. Tim and I have taken a look at that, so we will get into that during the program. We'll talk all things NCAA tournament. I want to start, though. Ed Scott appeared on the Gary Parrish Show. Ed Scott, Tim, is the athletic director for the University of Memphis, and he spoke for about 30 minutes with Gary. Gary being a phenomenal interviewer, really cut to the core, it was a great interview, and I wanted to play about three or four clips from that, get your thoughts, because one thing that I do think is interesting, and even Ed touched on this, is that there's always a difference with Tiger basketball with a national perception versus a local perception. Sometimes I think maybe one side has it right, then other times it's not. But I kind of wanted to play a few clips for you and get kind of your 35,000 foot reaction. And I'll also weigh in on my thoughts as well. Eric Hastein going to join the program. Tim, I got to tell you, the Grizzlies are doing great work here. I was really, really, really confined to the thought that the 8 was about where they were going to finish in the odds, and now I got my eyes set on as high as the 6. So we'll talk some Grizzlies as well. World Baseball Classic Final is set tonight. We've got Team USA taking on Venezuela, the American team with Italian last names. Finally, the wagon fell last night.
You know, a buddy of mine tweeted out, Aaron Nola was born in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the manager that didn't know they hadn't qualified for the quarterfinals didn't have interest in him. So I've got no issue with
I don't
team
care at all.
Italy. I would play for, look, if I was good enough to play for any country, I would first play for the United States. And if they didn't want me, I'd play for somebody else. So I don't have an issue with the Italians. We should be thankful.
No,
the Italians. They beat Mexico for us.
They proved they were Americans. They could have laid down in that game.
That's right.
Like, it would have probably been just as beneficial for them to lay down as it was to absolutely smoke Mexico. So, I was grateful for that. So we'll talk about that. Also get into a lot of the NCAA tournament. We also had some NFL news. Another big trade happening today. Jaylen Waddle headed to the Broncos. So now, George, this is half of the AFC East is tanking, rebuilding?
Pretty much.
Sweet. Awesome. So we'll get into that and more. But let's start first with Ed Scott's appearance on the Gary Parrish Show. So, Tim, I've mentioned to you, I thought the most likely outcome was that Penny Hardaway would be back. There's several factors for that, but I've been pretty clear that I thought this is where it was headed. But now we have heard from Ed Scott on the actual thought process of the decision. And so let's take a listen to the first clip, George, on this is a little bit more into the interview. This is about halfway through, but this is where I felt like he succinctly laid out the decision, and here's what Ed had to say.
Yeah, the easiest way, and I think the number one way, Gary, is we got to win.
Right.
Right. We have to win. I mean, there's just no two ways about it. Penny knows that. It's not about putting pressure on them. Look, I can come up with the best marketing, promotions and give things away. That's going to get them there for a little bit. But if we don't put a good product on the floor, the thing I love about Memphis is there's no apathy, right? They either love you or they don't. And that's where we are. And so Penny knows he's got to win. If we put a winner on that floor, what I would expect to happen is season tickets are not going to sell like we want, right? If I said anything else, I'd be disingenuous. I'd be lying to you, and I'm not going to do that. But I know single games will have a huge uptick if we're playing well. The other thing, Gary, that I looked at was the state of our program, right? We aspire to be a P4 program across the board. And so when I look at Penny's record against P4 programs, he's currently, after this year, he's 25-20. When I look at prior to this year, he's 24-14, right? And so one of the barometers I used to make this particular decision this year about bringing Penny back was, is Memphis basketball still in a good place? And what I've learned, because I don't come from Memphis, is there's a local perception and then there's national perspective, right? And you get to see it because you fly to New York and you talk to other people. You're not just in Memphis. And think about the people who are still scheduling us. These aren't guaranteed games. These are home and home games with Texas and Vandy, a six-year series with Louisville, Baylor, right? I can go on and on. And so that also tells me, even with Penny as the coach, other programs are willing to play us. They're not going to play us if there's no benefit, and they're certainly not coming to Memphis to play us if there's no benefit for their program. So that's another variable that goes into it when I look at the business side of it. If we're playing well and Louisville's coming in here and Louisville's playing well, Gary, you know, regardless of Penny Hardaway or not, that FedEx Forum's going to be packed, right? And so I have to take the emotion out of it, which is hard to do. It's I'm not going to lie to you. It was a tough decision all the way around. But when I look at those factors that people aren't talking about, right, those factors matter too. And I think our program is not where we want it. But if we win, I know the fans will come back out and support it because they love Tiger basketball. And the program is bigger than Ed Scott, for sure. And it's even bigger than Penny Hardaway. And that's the conversations that I've had to have with him. You have to understand that, Penny. If I make a decision, it's not because I don't like you. It's because we got to do what's best for Memphis basketball. And I think Penny Hardaway believes that in his heart, which makes the conversations that much easier when you have a coach who understands that dynamic.
What do you take away from that, Tim?
I mean, I think what he said is more than fair, right? It's, at the end of the day, this fan base wants this program to be a consistent winner, expects it to be a consistent winner. And if they're winning, people will show up at FedEx Forum. So it does feel to me, and maybe I'm crazy, it feels like next year's make or break. Right?
Oh, yes. Then and
like,
that,
hey, everything's here. You had your mulligan.
Yep.
Now you got to produce again or it's over.
No, I think you're 100% right. And they kind of get into that where Ed didn't want to like say, you know, hey, you want to put a number on it. But really what he laid out was when he was interviewing for the job, one of the first questions that he had asked the board or the ambassadors and the president was, what is the expectation for Tiger basketball? And I think this is what I'm just going to go ahead and say is now going to be the standard, because this is the first time I think someone from the university has officially articulated, but the expectation is to make the NCAA tournament. The goal is to make the second weekend. And as he laid out, you know, if guys get hurt, then, you know, you can factor that in. But the expectation, because of how they can schedule, is they are one of the few teams in the American that could actually earn an at-large bid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they stumble in non-conference play, they have the opportunity to win the league and make the tournament that way. But that to me is basically what they're establishing, is the expectation is make the tournament, and anything short of that is where it starts to become a failure. All right, George, let's then get to the next clip, which I believe is where he kind of lays out the plan for how this is going to get right this year.
Well, you saw some of it yesterday, right? And I'd like to address one thing, and then I promise I'll come back to the plan. You know, when we talk about waiting to make a decision, it was waiting to make a decision because there were some things I needed to understand from Penny about his staff, about what was going on with the program. One of the things that I talked to Penny about is that you have to make decisions quicker. Right. Last year, you waited too long. Let's talk about PJ Haggerty and Dane Danger. Right. Look, people say I should have sued the NCAA. The schools aren't suing the NCAA. The individuals are. And I saw Dane when he came back to watch a game late in the season and he hugged me and we have a great relationship. What I told Penny was don't wait on Dane because I have some donors who will pony up the money that Dane will need to come back. Right. So that's the Dane side. The PJ Haggerty, I totally understand why he waited, but we never had a counter offer or a number from PJ Haggerty to bring him back. I think if you would ask Penny if he would do the same thing all over again, I think his answer would be no, that he would tell these guys, look, I got to build a team. I can't wait for you as much as I love you. And you folks need to let me know what you're doing. The staffing part, those are his decisions. I did not go to him and say, you must fire X. The only time I ever do that with coaches is if there's a personnel issue, when one, I wouldn't be able to discuss, or two, NCAA violations. So these were Penny's decisions. Part of what he said is, I need somebody on offense. I need somebody on defense. I need an analyst, and I need a developer. And then me, being a good sounding board, are those people on your current staff? And if so, why don't you have them situated that way? And if the answer is no, can we acquire the people that can do those things for you? And his answer is yes, and here's who I think can do it, right? And he needs to understand what he's good at. Penny is one of the best individual skill developers in America. When I was at Virginia, we sent Reese Beekman, right? One of the best guards in the ACC to work out with Penny Hardaway to prepare for the draft. That was Tony Bennett sending somebody to work with Penny Hardaway. So if you're good at the X's and O's and individual skill development, but you're not used to the front office, because we have to be honest, the industry has changed right underneath his feet, right? If he's not good at that side, can we hire a GM to do that? And the answer is simply yes, right? So that's when he says to me, I need a GM. I can't spend time recruiting the players, doing the contracts, running the offense, running the defense. And here are the three words that Penny said to me that I knew he was in a good place. Ed, I need help. And Penny Hardaway has never said that to me before, right? And so that tells me that he stepped back and has assessed the program and says, look, if in order to reach the expectations which are mutual, I need to change some of these things. Our nutrition has to get better. We can help him with that. Our bodies were not Memphis basketball bodies, right? You could see that on the court. So strength and conditioning has to improve. Accountability has to improve. You can find guys, but if you're finding them and that's not working, do you have the right guys in your program to build the culture? Because you said the guys weren't buying in. Then what do we have to do different to get them to buy in? Because that's your job as a coach. And he engaged me in those conversations. And that's why at the end of the day, I said, okay, I think the plan he has is a good one. My job now is to make sure he has the tools to execute it and then hold them accountable this year for doing it.
So I actually thought of all the answers, this is the best one, because, you know, to a certain degree, this is a persuasive speech. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if Ed views it more of, it's not trying to give like a political speech in which you're selling your vision, but he would view it as articulating why he did what he did. But I actually think this is the best answer because this is the one that checks all the boxes. Number one, you addressed the issues that I think a lot of fans were rightfully fed up about, because I don't think every criticism a fan has should just be dismissed by coaches. I think some of them can be realistic, with also the acknowledgement that no one's around the team more. No one probably thinks about the team more than Penny Hardaway does. But this one, to me, laid out a more organized program. It addressed the issues that I think upset fans. And none of it really felt pie in the sky, like that's, you know, unattainable. Like all of these things, whether it be, you know, an offensive, defensive coordinator, if you will, in terms of basketball, a GM, analyst that is helping with from the analytics side, like all of these things, I think are what most fans would view as a modern basketball program, and they're all realistic to attain. I thought that this was the answer that kind of like knocked it out of the park.
Well, I think, and I'm curious what Tiger fans think, and, you know, there might be just a group of them that no matter what an athletic director says, they're not going to listen to it. But I don't think this was looking down. You know how sometimes athletic directors will look down on
yes.
fans and, well, yeah, he's won this, this, and this. He went to the NCAA tournament and they had an injury last year. And, you know, I think for the most part, this was like, yeah, this year was bad and he's got to do better. And he came to me and said, I need help. And I thought that was telling. Like, I feel like you don't get this from a lot of folks in sports. It felt like he was being honest, where he was like, look, Penny Hardaway is a guy that is very well respected at what he does in teaching the game and using that as a specific example of Virginia. But he's got to do better.
I'll give another one. Caleb Mills. I'm sorry, not Caleb Mills. George, help me out. The played at Houston. Knicks drafted him late first. I'm blanking on the name. But Kelvin sent him here for the draft.
So I think there's an emphasis of like, hey, he knows what he's doing, but he knows he has to do better. He came to me and said, we've got to make these changes. And yeah, it feels like next year, as I said before, it's all in for next season. And I think what's important is what Ed Scott alluded to, which is unlike a lot of teams, unlike South Florida. Let's use South Florida, for example.
Sure.
South Florida had a hell of a season. They're probably going to lose their coach. He's more than likely going to go to, you know, Syracuse or Providence or somewhere up there. But regardless, they had a great season, right? If they lost on Sunday, they're not getting in.
Nope.
Memphis.
I mean, look, they won the tournament and they've won a bunch of games and they're an 11.
They haven't lost since January 31st.
And they're an 11.
Right. So I'm not saying it's impossible for other teams to get in at large, but Memphis is in a very unique situation. They're not full on Gonzaga, but like, would you say, and I'm kind of putting you on the spot.
No, I'm happy.
Outside of Gonzaga and maybe San Diego State, but I don't know. I think Memphis might be the second best situation for getting home and homes, getting big time opponents, getting invited to elite preseason tournaments like the Maui 2 years ago. Like, they're in rare air. They're not Gonzaga, but they have the ability. They've got multiple avenues to get to the dance. And South Florida, as we just saw, had one avenue, and they're really good. And they might win a game or two coming up here this week. So I think, you know, and this is not something fans don't know, but like, I think there is an opportunity where it's not a one-way street. I imagine it's going to be a really challenging non-con next year.
Oh, it might be as brutal. I mean, obviously, we have no idea what everyone's roster looks like, but in terms of what they already have on paper, it could be just as brutal as this one was.
Yeah, and you need sometimes these teams to return the favor, right? And have good seasons. Like Ole Miss and Mississippi State were not very good this year. Vandy ended up being great this year. You just Wake Forest is an NIT team. UNLV's an NIT team.
Baylor's a crown team.
Yeah, shout out to the crown. You know where I stood on this. I thought maybe doing this show, but I think for the most part, I kind of look at these coaching, hiring, firings a little bit differently than most in the national space, which is like, I don't think everyone should just get fired. You know, I want to know what the heck happened. Okay, you had a bad season. You know, look, I have a buddy, or had a buddy, on the Syracuse staff. That seemed like it was a train going nowhere, right? They never really had anything positive happening. You've seen it with Memphis, and I know there's some loud folks out there saying that he should be gone. I didn't understand it. It's like, all right, well, if you fire Penny, it's not like the previous two guys did anything since Cal left. Like, Unless you're telling me Cal's like, you know what, I want to go back to Memphis. Like, no, I think you run it back, and you're seeing this more and more in college sports where it's like, okay, we could fire our coach, buy him out, buy out all the players, then buy out another coach from his contract, bring him in here, give him a raise, or it's like, let's double down. And if we've seen it before, maybe we can come together and make this thing happen. And I think for Memphis and in the American, there's that opportunity where come next fall, I will say at almost a 99% certainty, they will be the most talented roster in the conference.
I think that's true. So there's a couple of things. On the scheduling, this is actually where I would have put this in the pros to bring Penny back. It's true, once upon a time, historically, Memphis was able to schedule non-conference games at a very elite level, particularly given their standing in the world of college basketball. I am more convinced than ever that the way that they are able to get all of these games has nothing to do with Memphis anymore. It has everything to do with Penny Hardaway. And that affords you the mulligan in that either you can have the non-conference schedule and knock it out of the park like they did last season, and then you can be set up to, you know, get a top five seed, which I think they're the only team in the American that could do that if they were to roll through conference play, or it allows you to stub your toe and then get back to it in conference play. This was kind of one of the more disappointing aspects of this season is I would have liked to have seen the data point of, let's say Memphis has the non-conference results that they did. Like, just keep it the same for the sake of argument. And then let's say that they basically, we'll go positive this way. Let's say that they roll through the American, they finish tied with USF, they split the home games, and then they win the conference tournament and they get in. I would have been curious to see how they would have been treated because of their non-conference. Like, would they have been elevated because of who they played in non-conference play? And my suspicion is probably yes.
Yeah. I mean, you look at South Florida, they're non-con. They beat Utah State, who obviously Memphis lost to, but they beat them at home. They played Bama, lost to them. They played Colorado State, lost to them. Played VCU, lost to them. And they played Oklahoma State, who's an NIT team, lost to them, lost to George Washington. Like, South Florida's non-conference schedule was pretty mediocre. They were 8-5 going into conference play, and their wins were a good one over Utah State. Charleston's a decent win, and then the rest were kind of bye games, right?
Yeah.
So it was fine. I think there's a reason they're an 11. They lost three games in conference play. So, yeah, if they were tied, if Memphis was, I think they were, what, 5-8, I want to say, in the non-con?
Yeah, that sounds right.
And they lost, and they had the identical USF record. Let's say they went on a run like USF did. I think they're in the 8-9 range, if I had to guess. Maybe 10, I don't know. But I think Memphis also would have got the benefit of the doubt. If Memphis was on an 11-game winning streak right now,
yeah,
I think they would be looked at much higher than South Florida. And I also think South Florida, and I talked about it last night on my show, I think South Florida is wildly underrated in this tournament. I think they can make it to the second weekend.
No,
like, I think their draw is decent. We don't know about Mykal Brown, but I think to our overall point, South Florida doesn't get the benefit of the doubt that I think Memphis would have got.
Yeah, I think they would have been somewhere in that 7-9 range. And I mean, because that's the other problem. It's like, USF getting an 11 seed, they kind of tipped their hand. Like, if they would not have won on Sunday, they were not getting in.
No. Yeah, I mean, I was doing the Selection Sunday show, and I'm like, you know, we were watching Purdue and Michigan and USF. Like, the field's set.
Yep.
Like, Purdue and Michigan are in, and if USF loses here, they're toast.
Yeah,
so
they basically were saying whoever wins that game, whether it be Wichita State was probably going to get that 11, or USF was.
Yeah, I mean, which is just insane, but that's a whole other discussion.
It's a discussion about the league. Okay, George,
By the way, real quickly,
yeah,
going
sure, go
back,
ahead.
I mean, Houston was still in the conference. But going back to 23, they went 26-8, but they had a win over Houston, and they were obviously a power. And they what got the eight the year against Florida Atlantic or the nine?
They were the eight.
They were the eight. So
were they in white?
Yeah, they were. I'm looking at KenPom right now. It says 8 seed. So they were 26-8 in 23 and got the 8 seed. So yeah, I think if they were 23-10, maybe they're 9 or 10 seed. You know, we're splitting hairs here, but I think the overall point is, I think they would have got looked at a little bit higher than South Florida did.
Okay, George, I have two more clips. One's on research. Remind me what the other one is, because I do want to play both of these.
The other one's on the time frame of this.
Yeah, so
reset.
this is the time frame of executing the plan. What would Ed Scott like to see?
I would like to have somebody within 7 to 10 days locked up, Gary, right? Even if we're working, if we've got MOUs signed so we know we have them, they can begin working on behalf of Memphis. In fairness to Penny, he's been in conversations with some folks. We've talked to five potential GMs. Tim Duncan is working with him on that. We've had some conversations with some assistant coaches. I think we're close on potentially associate head coach that Penny would be very comfortable with, and I think fans would really appreciate. The other thing I hear, Gary, all the time is that he's turned over so many coaches. He's turned over more than most, but they never talk about Nolan Smith leaving and winning a championship and being a 15 seed, right? They don't talk about Tony Madlock leaving and winning a championship in the SWAC and then going and winning a first four game. Cody Topper is with the G League as a head coach. Jordan, who left our bench last year, wanted to be a coach instead of an ops person. So I had to step back, because if I just look at the surface and go, wait, he's turned all these people over. Well, some of them have went on and done well as a head coach. So there must be something there that's working pretty well, right? That's why you have to look at both sides of the coin when you're making these arguments. But to answer your question succinctly, I'd like to have a staff within 7 to 10 days if possible, because we all know this, and I don't want to talk about tampering, but people are announcing they're going in the portal before the portal opens. The portal is the time when you can talk to them and negotiate and do that. But if Penny doesn't have an eye on who he wants, both outside of the American, within our own roster, who he wants to return and who he wants to go procure nationwide, then we're going to have some problems. The other thing, and no one's talking about this, Cello has committed to us, a local Memphian. That's a heck of a ball player that is physical and can probably come in and play right away. We're still deep in the hunt with Fred Smith Jr., right? So there's some of that that I had to look at too and say, okay, because when we've had Memphians, we've played pretty darn good, right? And that will draw some fans back as well. So that was another factor that went into my decision. So it's not just the coaching staff. It's also the roster, right? And how fast can we be prepared to build that roster and get them in here in the summer?
I don't think we have to really add much to that. Like, it shows that I think that they are aware that time is of the essence.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and then lastly, this is the question on resourcing, which is obviously a big topic, because while there's always going to be murkiness, because I don't know how you feel, but I said this yesterday because I think Eddie will even mention it. I subscribe to Matt Brown's Extra Points newsletter and his service. I care less about what you spend on the what we would say from the university side. I'm not saying I care zero about it, but I care less about it. I need to know how much money you have for the roster, and everybody's murky on that. We can also agree how you resource a program does dictate what we think about the program. Like, we went through Matt's list yesterday. I think of the top 20 spenders, I think 16, maybe 17 made the tournament. So, like, it's not like a guarantee you can buy wins, but it certainly appears to be a barrier of entry. And so there's always been the questions of how is this program resourced? And here's what Ed had to say.
Yeah, so the first way I would attack this question, Gary, is that the landscape has changed, right? Memphis has always been funded well, but a scholarship was a scholarship back in the day. Right. We didn't have to generate additional revenue, right? Our conference affiliation, and it's no knock on Pernetti or the American, because Tim and I have an awesome relationship, really do. the American, we just don't get as much TV revenue as some of these others, right? And the Big East schools that you refer to, they also don't have football, and they don't have to spread their resources. So looking at that as our baseline, yes, the answer is simply yes. I expect that in men's basketball, we will be the best funded in the American. Again, we were this year. I saw something come out yesterday where somebody had FOIA'd all the operating budgets of the Division I basketball programs. And if that information is accurate, I can't corroborate it. But if it's accurate because it's public information, then we are clearly the most funded from an operating standpoint. We know the coach's salary. Our Penny makes more than a lot of coaches in the P4, and he makes more than Big East coaches. And then from a rev share standpoint, I can tell you what folks like Georgia Tech have put out, NC State have put out, you know, and some others, that we are above the numbers they're putting out. And rev share is what I guarantee Penny. So there's no doubt in my mind that we should be the most well-funded, not only in the American, but in the group of six in men's basketball. We have not gone backwards in funding in any sports since Ed Scott has become the AD. I've over doubled the funding for basketball on a rev share from when I got here. Football's numbers have gone up. Women's soccer has gone up. I mean, I'm not coming here to strip anything from basketball. And let's just get this out there to everybody. If we have any hopes of realignment whenever it happens at Memphis, both football and men's basketball have to be good, right? You have the A-10. I'll give you an example of basketball. We have the A-10 American Challenge coming. And you notice that Memphis is going to be in the first two iterations of that, because that was a stipulation from the A-10 that Memphis had to be one of the teams that played. If Memphis is that bad, then why does the A-10 want to make sure we're one of the two teams that are playing, right? And so, again, you look at all that and you start to go, okay, we're still in really good position, especially from a funding standpoint. And that's going to continue under my tenure. So when I hear it, you know, you talk about frustration of the public, and when you hear comments, that's one of the things, if I'm being completely transparent, Gary, that does get under my skin a little bit, because I have never taken a dollar away from men's basketball. I've actually doubled their rev share and giving them more an operating budget.
Kind of defending himself there a little bit, huh?
Yeah, I mean, there's also a little tell your story in that, because the Memphis, you know, a lot of these schools have a collective and then they have their in-house rev share.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, Memphis wanted to fold everything and bring it under one roof. So Memphis shut their collective down. And so, like, all of the money that's being donated is going to the school, therefore that's expanding the amount of rev share. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure.
So, but yes, I mean, there is definitely, you know, I think that there's the perception that they have been cheap.
You would know better than me, but I would say that Memphis is definitely, is it because of Haggerty going to Kansas State?
I think it's the, you look at the team in general. Like, when you saw Memphis, even though they were talented, did you really go like, those were the market standard?
Now, did you see, and this, we might be diverging into something else, but reportedly, and I think it was Front Office Sports who put it out there, Indiana had the most expensive roster?
So this is Matt Brown. This is what I was talking about.
Okay.
So Indiana spent the most from the athletic department. Like, when you know, like, when you look at, like, the athletic department financials, Indiana spent the most. They obviously spent a ton on basketball, but a lot of it was the money they owed to the staff they fired.
Okay. All right. That makes a lot more sense.
They were, like, $11 million higher than the next, like, it looked like $20 million was like what the big boys were spending, and they spent like 11 over that.
And sometimes, you know, your roster may not click, but I looked at that roster and I'm like, that ain't the most expensive roster in college basketball. So that makes more sense. Okay.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Eric Hasenstein's going to join the program. We'll get his thoughts on the Grizzlies and more when we come back right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. That music means we welcome to the program the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. He is Eric Hasenstein. Eric, are these the traveling trips when you wish you got miles for chartering flights?
I mean, I always wish we got miles, but that's I'll take the way we fly and travel over getting miles any day of the week.
Do y'all get hotel points?
It depends. I think you do when you buy like things in the hotel. Sometimes I'll give them to you, but no, basically because the team covers the bill. Who pays the bill gets the points.
That was one of my buddies who used to be an ops guy in college basketball. Even though obviously the school's picking up the tab, they let him get all the miles.
Right.
And he was at a Big West school when Hawaii was playing in the Big West. He traveled pretty well during the summers.
We use them. To my understanding, the team ends up banking them up, and then when they bring in, you know, free people for workouts, things like that, that's where the tickets come from. So it all goes back into the company good, the good of the company. So. There's times though, like I always put my number down, and if you buy lunch in the hotel, or you know, you sit in the hotel bar and have a drink or two, those add up. Those are points. If you pay that part of the bill, those are points.
You're like Vince Vaughn in the opening scene of Wedding Crashers. You know, if you want to throw me some miles, we'll take them too.
Right, right, yeah. No, I always put it down just to let them know I'm a member, if nothing else. And then and a lot of times now they have it on file, so yeah. There was one hotel who mistakenly gave everybody points. I hope that person didn't lose their job, but I was quite grateful for that.
Yes.
There's quite a few.
Some people would say that person is a hero. Okay, obviously,
I think so.
Obviously from the competitive standpoint, we know what the score is. But I'm curious, as someone who's watching it night in, night out, who are some of the guys that you think have helped themselves the most? Because while big-name guys are sitting down, that means there's opportunity. And you don't know when opportunity is going to strike in the NBA. Who are some guys that you think have if not with the Grizzlies, have at least helped themselves in maybe getting employment next year?
That's a really good question. I think Javon Small has gotten better. I'll just talk about the guys that are, you know, that we have been here for a minute. Javon Small's made the most of the chance, and he didn't play last night, but he's been playing better. He's shooting the basketball better, figuring out how to defend the point guard better. I think Olivier Maxence Prosper has helped himself because it was just fuel for the game for him. And there wasn't a lot of opportunity for him to play in Dallas in those years. So he plays hard. He's athletic. He's just a guy that was much more athletic than most people he was playing around for most of his life. And then he got to the NBA and everybody's athletic, and he's playing at a breakneck speed where you've got to figure out when to ramp it up, when to pull it back a little bit. And he's learning the nuances of that. I think other than that, like the guys have done, like Taylor Hendricks is getting an opportunity to play. He's shown flashes. He did again last night of, it's just consistency with Taylor. And I think he's getting he's making the most of his opportunity. We knew what Jalen could do. We knew what Gigi could do. Cam has made the most of this whole season without a doubt, because we knew Cam could shoot it. We had seen it. There were times and there were flashes. Consistently though, he's done a lot with it. And then, Cedric was a first round pick and a high first round pick at that. So we're seeing those go there. As far as past that, it's hard to say, because guys like Tyler Burton and Dejan Giroux have just been there for a short time, and they're playing hard. They're trying to show that they're capable of being in there, but it's hard to say what other teams see in them. I Tyler Burton looks the part. I think it's just figuring out the speed of the NBA game, but he's got really fluid athletic movement. He's got to finish plays.
With Olivier Maxence, do guys that are having to, I guess I would say, like play out of position, you know what I mean? Like the role that he's being asked to play is not probably what best suits his game. Does that almost work in his favor though? When you accept that role, like how do you think that that's working out for him?
It works out in all the guys' favor. It's not only Omax, it's Cam's not a traditional point guard. Cam's a guy off the ball, shooter, scorer, kind of like a Steve Kerr was. And Steve Kerr played point guard, but he also was a shooter. So remember when he was with the Bulls and Michael Jordan would facilitate the triangle offense, Steve Kerr was pretty open a lot of times and made the most of that. So I think those two guys have really solidified that, hey, like they're not playing in their position, they're still producing. guarding bigger guys, guarding quicker guys. Same types of thing. Yeah, I think that does work in their favor because anybody that's seen the game long enough knows, look, Omax isn't a center. And that last night he's going against Nick Richards, who's 7 feet tall, or you know, even Leonard Miller, who's 6'10", 6'11", but has played down low. And you talk about the size that the Bulls had, and that was a factor. Gershon Yabusele is only 6'8", but he's 290 pounds at 6'8", just moving guys out of the way. They had big bodies. And, you know, they don't have Nikola Vucevic anymore, but, you know, they still have guys that are capable down there. And, yeah, there's those times, and it's a hard task. But, you know, look, if you ask anybody on that roster right now about, hey, you know, this is really tough, are you guys – struggling with it mentally, I'm pretty sure the answer to it too would be like, no, yeah, we don't want to lose, and that never is fun, but we're getting our opportunity to prove we can play in this league, so we're going to make the most of it. I mean, the bottom line, at the end of the day, it's a lot of guys that are getting a chance that, you know, would be at the back end of rosters to be NBA players. They're getting regular minutes, and they're going against guys who have been NBA players, lottery picks, highly thought of and sought after free agents or draft picks. And at the end of the day, the talent usually rises up. The guys that have been there, have done it, have had more experience playing consistent stretches, even if they're with new teams, that's a hard task to overcome. I'm not making excuses for it, but when you're going in with 8-9 guys, and out of those 8 or 9 guys, you have 2 or 3 that were first-round picks or 2 or 3 that are, you know, legitimate minute getters, and the other guys are ones that would be fighting for any minutes and now are playing starter minutes, and you're going against 8 guys who are all legitimate rotation players, it's going to be tough.
The other thing, a question that I get, and I want to yield to you because I would consider you my Grizzlies historian, mm-hmm. the number of injuries. And so we can't, you and I think have talked about this, you can't just go by number of guys that have been on the roster because rules have changed. Like, is the gold standard still Dave's last year when they played the Spurs and he's, you know, he cried at the end? And I'm not picking on Dave. I like Dave, but I always contend that's actually the highest mark. And the reason why they didn't have more roster moves though is because the rules were different that year.
Yeah, I think they would have continued to shuffle guys in and out. You lost everybody that year. You lost your starter, your backup at point guard. You lost your center. You lost your you lost everybody. That team was contending for the top spot in the West early in the season and won enough games early where they were able to hang on and just squeak into the playoffs. And then with a roster full of guys that they had to just piece together at the end of the year. That was the most significant and probably the most heartbreaking injury that I saw during the time that I've been here, which was the Mario Chalmers injury.
Yep.
And I know the Mario Chalmers name still like stings a little bit for Tiger fans.
Though, I think that made it more difficult because obviously when the Grizzlies acquired him, Tiger fans felt a certain way, but because the guy was busting his ass all night and like, you know, I felt like the tide had completely flipped on him and everybody is like, ready to welcome him with open arms, and then he pops his Achilles. It's like that was the ultimate irony for me.
Yeah, I mean, I can still see the play in Boston, and knowing we were already hearing that Brooklyn was really keeping an eye on him and was really interested in possibly pursuing him that offseason, and he was showing really good things with his time as a starter. And it led him to, you know, what could have been a life-changing opportunity. And if you break it down, he's never played in the NBA since. He never made it back. He was never able to come back and play NBA basketball again after that injury. And that's tough because he's tried, and he's tried to get back in, and he's tried to, you know, he's tried to hang on and do whatever he can, but it's gone. It's over. It's done. And that it's that one play, and you're just like, man, you're talking about the type of money that even after tax, I mean, there's a number, and then you got to kind of diminish the number with agent fees and taxes, but that's still a ridiculous amount of money to just one injury, and it never happens.
All right, Chris Harrington's going through his Grizzlies top 25, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this. If we set aside the core four and say that they're in their own tier, in your estimation, who is the fifth most significant Grizzly?
Oh, man. Significant? You're not talking talent?
All right, let's say this. Who would be your if you say, I'm not going to make you power rank the top four, or the core four, but if you had to do a top five Grizzlies, who are you picking fifth?
Of players?
Yep.
Well, I think you have to pick, as much as he hasn't played in the last couple of years, you have to pick Ja. I mean, he's the most
over
talented
Powell.
Guy. Yeah, he's the most talented guy that's come through. Although Powell was there, Powell really came into his own as he went into L.A. and took that role that was much more suited to his game, to be the, you know, the Robin to Kobe Bryant's Batman rather than the leader. But he was really talented. I think you go, you know, I think you go Ja, Powell, Jaren, Rudy. That's your next group. You know, OJ had a ton of talent and never came to fruition. You had Shane Battier, who wasn't necessarily super talented like the other guys were, but just played the right way and really was a leader, not only on the court, off the court, and helped get this franchise going. Guys that came through like James Posey, Jason Williams, who was electric, but was only here a short time. And then, you know, went on to Miami to win a title. There's been some good players walk through the door, but there's no doubt that the Jaws arguably, even with the core four in terms of talent, there's nobody been more talented than Ja. And Powell was super talented and you know, Jaren super talented. Because the fact is you haven't had a ton of super high draft picks. Mike Conley's incredibly talented. Marc Gasol incredibly talented. Zach Randolph was picked up when he had veteran savvy. Tony Allen may not be as talented overall as a basketball player, but without a doubt the best defender you ever had, and that made him as valuable as he was. In the midst of all of that, you know, it's hard to say with this group because they haven't been around that long. There was the lean years where there was really not a lot that rolled through here that you went, wow, that's it. But there were some guys that were able to make their things. The top 25 all time, if you talk about overall picture and success, yeah, you start with a core four. I think you have to put Powell in there. I think you have to put John there because they won playoff series. I think you have to put Powell in there because he got them to the playoffs with that group. But even then, one of the years he was hurt a lot of the year, and Brian Cardinal, who everybody lamented as just being a complete disaster of a signing, wasn't, because one year he stepped in for Powell and helped them get to the playoffs. The problem with the signing was they added years onto the contract that they didn't have to add. Instead of making it a like 3-year and $18 million deal at that time, you know, $6 million was kind of a little above average type deal, like long-term deal, and they gave him 6 and 36. Well, he gets hurt and then he's not playing all six of those, and everybody thinks it was just this colossal disaster, which it really wasn't. Eventually they moved off of it. I think you have to put Mike Miller in there because of the legitimacy of his shooting and the leadership he brought to that group too. So,
and we'd not seen shooters at that point.
Yeah, no, he was different, and they got him by giving up Drew Gooden, who was their fourth overall pick and was not going to make the transformation to the position they wanted him to make. They wanted him to move to three, and that just wasn't who he was. And that was unfair to ask Drew at that state, you know, as a young player. The crazy thing is when Lorenzen came in, I remember the 33-26 game he had against Dallas, and I think they lost and the team wasn't that great, but he gave something that others could not. He gave the fans a hometown hero and a productive player as well. So I'd be remiss not to speak of him. And then, you know, there were some guys that were just the perfect fits and pieces. And I think
Posey,
the only player that ever got upset with a question I asked, which was actually written by our production crew, because we were doing a piece about the compliments of Jason Williams to Earl Watson, was Earl. Earl thought we were, you know, taking a shot. And I'm like, dude, we're not taking a shot. We're talking about how you guys compliment each other. Relax. And he kind of was a little defensive about it, but he was really a steady hand behind Jason Williams, who was the electricity. And then Earl could come in with that second unit and really lead the team. And, you know, through an alley-oop that turned into one of the greatest dunks in franchise history, and then the alley-oop against the New Jersey Nets in the Pyramid where he threw it, and I thought there was no chance Stromile Swift catches that basketball. Not only did he catch it, he about broke the backboard with a dunk that, you know, it's still I remember Don's call. It's one of those plays that just stands out because at that time they were looking for legitimacy. The Nets were really good, and they just browbeat them all night. And I think at the end of the day, it ended up getting Byron Scott fired. You know, they beat him by like 40, and it wasn't close. And so guys like that, but, you know, it's hard to rank in terms of if you're just talking overall talent or you're talking about contributions and what they meant to the organization. You know, you might have a guy like a Tony Allen who didn't have necessarily as much God-given talent as a Jaren Jackson, but his contributions and the way he helped pull the city together, it's hard to argue he's not in the top five.
Eric, we appreciate it, buddy.
Jeffrey, thank you, brother.
That is Eric Hastein, Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. If you're thinking about selling your home, call my buddy Josh Heisall with Keller Williams Realty, because regardless of your home's condition, my friend Josh Heisall will make you a cash offer for your home at full market value. Oftentimes, you'll get the phone calls, the robocalls, wanting to buy your house for cash. Don't listen to them. Those are well below market value. And if you call Josh Heisall, if you need the flexibility and the convenience of the instant cash offer, he'll do so at the full market price. Josh will make you that guaranteed instant cash offer, and you can get all the same convenience, but walk away with more money in your pocket. He'll even give you some extra time. If you need it, you won't be rushed. You'll have 4 months to hand over the keys. He also offers flexible fees, no upfront costs, and he'll even let you out of your contract at any time, risk-free. So give his team a phone call at 901-461-8147 or check out the website, joshhasthebuyers.com. You can also Google him, Josh Heisall, H-I-S-A-W, and you can see over 300 five-star Google reviews. It's Josh Heisall and his team at the Keller Williams Realty Group. When we come back, let's get into the list. We'll get into some of the NFL news. We had a big trade today, as well as more conversation about NBA expansion. We'll get Tim's insights on what perhaps maybe the Vegas team will be named. Also get into the World Baseball Classic. Stick around. You're listening to Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.